21. Were active in founding the Hong Kong Shanghai Bank, and who were heavily interested in the Asiatic drug traffic. The staff economist of the Royal Colonial Society was Alfred Marshall, founder of the monetarist theory which Milton Friedman now peddles under the aegis of the Hoover Institution and other supposedly right-wing think tanks. Marshall, through the Oxford Group, became the patron of Wesley Clair Mitchell, who then talked Burns and Friedman. In 1884, Milner augmented the work of the Royal Colonial Society with an inner group, the Imperial Federation League. Both groups now function as the Royal Empire Society. Vladimir Halperin, in Lord Milner and the Empire, writes, "It was through Milner and some of his friends that the Round Table Group came into being." The Round Table, it should be said, is an authority to this day on all Commonwealth interests. He states that Milner raised a considerable sum for the work of the Round Table, including £30,000 from Lord Astor, £10,000 from Lord Rothschild, £10,000 from the Duke of Bedford, and £10,000 from Lord Ivy. Milner launched a magazine called the Empire Review, later called the Round Table Quarterly. Halperin also notes another contribution of Milner. He played an important part in the drafting of the famous Balfour Declaration in December of 1917. It is a fact that, with Balfour, he was its co-author. As far back as 1915, Milner had realized the need for a Jewish national home, and had never ceased to be warmly in favor of its creation. Milner, like Lloyd George, Amory, and many others, saw that the Jewish national home could also contribute to the security of the empire in the Near East. The Milner Round Table later became the Royal Institute of International Affairs Council on Foreign Relations Combined, which exercises an opposed control for the world order over foreign and monetary policy in both the United States and Great Britain. Milner trained a group of ambitious young men who became known as his kindergarten. It included John Buchan, future Governor General of Canada, Jeffrey Dawson, later editor of the Times, and prominent supporter. 22. Of appeasement with the Cliveden set, led by Lord Astor, who owned the Times, Philip Kerr, 11th Marquess, Lord Lothian, the youngest member of the kindergarten. He served as private secretary to Lloyd George from 1916 to 20, and was given credit as largely responsible for the German provisions of the Treaty of Versailles. His Who's Who goes on to say that he played an important part in dealing with India, all dominions, and the United States. He was ambassador to the United States 1935-40, and was a close friend of Waldorf and Lady Astor. George Joachim Goskin, a liberal who was hailed as the greatest chancellor of the Exchequer, head of the Cunliffe Goskin Banking House with Lord Cunliffe, governor of the Bank of England. Goskin was also Chancellor of Oxford and the University of Edinburgh. His brother, Baron Sir Edward Goskin, was ambassador to Berlin. When Bethmann Hollweg told him that the Belgian treaty was a mere scrap of paper, Leopold S. Amory, who had two sons, Leopold, who was executed as a traitor in 1945, and Julian, who married Prime Minister Harold Macmillan's daughter, and served as left-wing correspondent on the Spanish front 1938-9, Churchill's personal representative to Chiang Kai-shek, 1945, Round Table Conference on Malta, 1955, Council of Europe, 1955-6. The senior Leopold Amory is described as a passionate advocate of British imperialism. He was on the staff of the Times, and wrote a 7-volume History of the South African War for the Times, served in the cabinet from 1916 to 22 MP 1911-45, First Lord of Admiralty, 1922-24, Secretary of State for India, 194,045, and arranged for India to have independence. He was a trustee of the Rhodes Trust. The Milner-Rothschild relationship was described in Terence O'Brien's biography, Milner, p. 97. Milner went to Paris on some business with Alphonse D. Rothschild, business calls in the city. Included a formal visit to Rothschild's weekend with Lord Rothschild at Tring, and visits with Edward Cecil, Lord Salisbury at Hatfield, while spending a weekend with Lord Rothschild at Tring. A press lord gave him a sleepless night, no further explanation given, talks with Rothschild. Milner attended a Zionist dinner given by Lord Rothschild, sitting next to Lawrence of Arabia, who interpreted for him in a talk with King Faisal. On p. 364, O'Brien notes, Milner. 23. lost no time in recreating his links with the city. He went first to Rio Tinto, which re-elected him to its board, and before long Rothschild asked him to be its chairman. Rio Tinto was one of the key firms in the Rothschild empire. Herbert Hoover was also appointed a director of Rio Tinto. He would soon be asked to head the Belgian Relief Commission, which prolonged World War I from 1916 to 1918. The Milner role in starting the South African War is described in British Supremacy in South Africa. Chapter 1 is headed Sir Alfred Milner's War, explained as follows. On the 19th of March, Chamberlain telegraphed to him, "The principal object of His Majesty's government in South Africa is peace. Nothing but a most flagrant offense would justify the use of force." P22, Milner had come to believe that war with the Transvaal was both inevitable and desirable. Milner had at last convinced Chamberlain that British supremacy in South Africa would be jeopardized unless the power of the Transvaal was broken. There is the evidence that Rothschild's round table minion, Milner, cold-bloodedly precipitated the Boer War for his master's gain. John Hayes Hammond, chief mining engineer for the House of Rothschild, also was sent to South Africa to precipitate the war. He formed the Uitlanders Reform Committee, with Lionel Phillips, head of gold and diamond mining firm Eckstein the Cummer House, George Farrer of East Rand Property Mines, and Colonel Frank Rhodes, brother of Cecil Rhodes. The committee was financed by Abe Bailey, Solly Joel, Barney Bernetto, and the Ecksteins, all of whom were big winners in the partition of the gold and diamond properties after the war. During this activity, Hammond was arrested by Paul Kruger, sentenced to death for promoting revolution, and was allowed to leave only after paying a $100,000 fine. He was then hired by the Guggenheims at $500,000 year salary, and in 1921 became chief lobbyist for the Council on Foreign Relations in Washington. Like other enterprises with which the Rothschilds have been connected, the Bank of England has been a center of international intrigue and espionage since its founding in 1694. Although the Rothschilds did not become associated with the bank until 1812-24, when Nathan Mayer Rothschild increased his fortune 6,500 times by taking advantage of false rumors that somehow swept the London Stock Exchange, purporting that England had lost at Waterloo. The Bank of England originated in a revolution, when William III, Prince of Orange, drove King James II from the throne. Since the Bank of England charter was granted by William in 1694, there has never been another revolt against the crown. The royal family has been secure, because the source of money, crucial to a revolution, has remained under control. King Charles I had managed to retain a shaky position because of support from the Duke of Buckingham, George Villiers, and others whose first names formed the word cabal, introducing a new term for intrigue. His successor, James II, tried to placate the powerful lords of England, but even his longtime supporters, scenting a change of power, began secret negotiations with the Prince of Orange. Wilhelm I, Prince of Orange, had been married several times, to Anne of Saxony, Charlotte de Bourbon, and Princess de Coligny. Today, every ruling house of Europe, as well as those out of power, is a direct descendant of King William, including Queen Juliana of the Netherlands, Margaretha, Queen of Denmark, Olaf V of Norway, Gustav of Sweden, Constantine of Greece, Prince Rainier of Monaco, and Jean, Grand Duke of Luxembourg, whose son married the daughter of C. Douglas Dillon. Lord Shrewsbury, Charles Talbot had been given places by both Charles II and James II, nevertheless, he played a leading role in the revolution. He took £12,000 to Holland to support William in 1688, returned with him, and was made Secretary of State. Sidney Godolphin, one of James II's last adherents, joined with the Duke of Sunderland and the Duchess of Portsmouth in correspondence with William prior to his invasion of England, and was appointed head of the Treasury by William. Henry Compton, Earl of Northampton, and Bishop of London, had been removed by James II. He signed the invitation to William to come to England. He was reinstated in his see in 1688. His son Francis became Lord Privy Seal. John Churchill, 1st Duke of Marlborough, had entered into negotiations with the Prince. 25. Of Orange in October 1, 687, and expressed his readiness to support him in August 1688. To allay James Ipe's suspicions, Marlborough then signed a renewed oath of fidelity to him November 10. On November 24, 1688, he joined the forces of William of Orange. Although William had married Mary, the daughter of James II, and had a legitimate claim to the throne of England, he could not take power as long as James II was on the throne. Therefore, he entered England with a force of 10,000 foot soldiers and 4,000 horse, a small force with which to conquer a great kingdom. With him were Churchill, Bentinck, the first Earl of Portland, Earl of Shrewsbury, and Lord Polwarth, whose descendant is a prominent member of the Anglo-American banking establishment. James II fled to the court of Louis XIV and was declared abdicated. This event was subsequently celebrated in English history as the Glorious Revolution. King James II had married a Catholic, Mary of Medina, in 1673, and launched a campaign to return England to the Roman hierarchy, after more than 100 years of Protestant rule. His two daughters were being brought up as Protestant, but he then bore a son, who was baptized as a Catholic, ensuing a Catholic heir to the throne. It was this situation which precipitated the Glorious Revolution. In 1688, James had an army of 40,000, all of whose officers were Roman Catholic. The invader, William, had only 13,000 men. To compound his problems, his ships were blown off course and missed their landing target. James was informed that his troops, most of whom were Protestant, would not obey their Catholic officers, and that they would not defend him. He then abdicated to France. A subsequent attempt to make a comeback in Ireland also met with defeat, which initiated the troubles which have continued there to this day. As King of England, William signed a Declaration of Rights on February 13, 1689, which indebted the King's power to suspend or amend or to dispense with its laws. England was now a constitutional monarchy, a form which has endured to the present day. This agreement placed the monarchy on an annual salary, which had to be 26. Voted on by Parliament. The purse strings were now firmly in the hands of the legislators. In 1694, William chartered the Bank of England. Since that time, there has never been a revolution, because no political force in England was able to raise money to finance such a challenge. In 1701, Parliament enacted the Act of Settlement, which banned the Catholic Stuarts from ever making a claim to the throne. Future monarchs must be members of the Anglican Church, and could not be married to a Catholic. Under this unified government, England experienced a great flowering of culture, hence the name, the Glorious Revolution. With the establishment of the Bank of England, enormous fortunes were created, and great estates were built throughout the country. William was succeeded by Queen Anne, who produced 17 children, none of whom survived. Her staff plied her with rich food, so that she became very fat and suffered poor health. When she died, there were numerous claimants to the throne. The successful claimant, the Elector of Hanover, from Germany, bolstered his claim by the research of the scholar, Gottfried Wilhelm Leibniz, 1646-1716. Leibniz spent 20 years in the documentation of the Brunswick family's claim, publishing his findings as Codex Juris Gentium Diplomaticus Hanoveri. Leibniz had been secretary of the Rosicrucian Society in Nuremberg in 1667. He loyally served the Brunswick family of Hanover as a genealogist and historian. He documented that Elizabeth, the Protestant daughter of King James I, had married Frederick V, Elector of Palatine. Their daughter, Sophie, married Ernest Augustus, the first Elector of Hanover. Although she died before Queen Anne, her son, now Elector of Hanover, was able to overcome the other claimants, because of Leibniz's carefully documented reports. Leibniz not only brought the Hanovers to England, but also Freemasonry. His Rosicrucian connections, which he shared with his English counterpart, Francis Bacon, placed a Freemason on the throne of England. Taking the name of George I, Hanover spoke no English, and indignantly refused to learn the language of his new domain. 27. Marlborough, ancestor of Winston Churchill, whose former daughter-in-law, Pam Harriman, is the leading power in the Democratic Party, is described in The Captain General, by Ivor Brown, the Commissioner of Public Accounts, found that the Duke of Marlborough had accepted gifts amounting to some £60,000 from Antonio Machado and Sir Solomon de Medina, contractors for bread and wagons for the army abroad, and 2.5% of all money allotted for payment of troops, some £175,000, later revised to £350,000. Marlborough claimed it had all been spent for intelligence, but witnesses testified he could not have spent more than £5,000 for this purpose in all of his campaigns. Donald Chandler's biography of Marlborough points out that the bread contractors such as Solomon and Moses Medina, Mynheer Hecup, Solomon Abraham, Vanderke and Machado, were for the most part Spanish or Dutch Jews of varying reliability and venality. Chandler says that they consistently gave short weight or added sand to their corn sacks. For a number of years, Medina, as chief army contractor, contributed an annual commission of £6,000 a year to Marlborough as his rakiyaf on army contracts. In addition to his English supporters, who were previously loyal to King James II, William brought with him from Amsterdam the group of avaricious financiers who were also the suppliers of his armies. One of his first official acts was the conferring of knighthood on Solomon de Medina. Machado and Pereira provisioned his armies in Spain and Holland, Medina supplied Marlborough in Flanders, Joseph Cortisset supplied Lord Galway in Spain, and Abraham Prato supplied the British army during the Seven-Year War. The most important act of William's reign was his granting of the charter of the Bank of England in 1694, although most of his biographers omit this salient fact. The concept of a central bank which would have the power of note issue, or issuing money, had already taken hold in Europe. The Bank of Amsterdam was started in 1609, its members aided William in his conquest of England. The Bank of Hamburg was chartered in 1619, the Bank of Sweden began the practice of issuing notes in 1661. These banks were chartered by 28 financiers whose ancestors had been bankers in Venice and Genoa. As the tide of world power shifted northward in Europe, so did the financiers. The Warburgs of Hamburg had begun as the Abraham del Banco family, the largest bankers in Venice. An interesting technique is revealed by the charter of the Bank of England it was slipped through, as part of a tonnage bill, which was later to become a recognized parliamentary technique. The charter provides that rates and duties upon tonnage of ships are made security to such persons, as shall voluntarily advance the sum of £1,500,000 towards carrying on the war against France. Other European banks, such as the banks of Genoa, Venice and Amsterdam, were primarily banks of deposit, but the Bank of England began the practice of coining its own credit into money, the beginning of the monetarist movement. The Bank of England soon created a new class of moneyed interests in the city, as opposed to the power of the old barons, whose fortunes derived from their landholdings. Of the 500 original stockholders, 450 lived in London. This was fed on of the preeminence of the city, now the world's leading financial center. For this reason, the Rothschilds identified their key American banks with the code word city. Early descriptions of the shareholders of the Bank of England identify them as a society of about 1,300 persons. They included the King and Queen of England, who received shares to the value of £10,000 each, Marlborough, who invested £10,000, he also invested large sums from his commissions in the East India Company. In 1697, and later became governor of the Hudson Bay Company, which paid a 75% dividend, Lord Shrewsbury, who invested £10,000, Godolphin, who invested £7,000 he predicted that the Bank of England would not only finance trade, but would carry the burden of her wars, which was proven true in the next 300 years. Virginia Cowles writes, in the Great Marlborough, England emerged from the war, as the dominant force, because the Bank of England's credit system enabled her to bear the burden of war without undue strain. 29. Other charter subscribers were William Bentinck, later the first Earl of Portland. He had been appage in William of Orange's household, accompanied William to England in 1670 on his initial visit, handled the delicate negotiations of his marriage with Mary in 1677, and prepared the details of William's invasion of England. He was given the title of Earl of Portland, and became the most trusted agent of William's foreign policy. In 1984, we find the 9th Duke, Cavendish Bentinck, is CHMN of Bayer's UK LTD and Nuclear Chemie Michorp GmbH Germany. He also had a distinguished career in foreign service, joining the Foreign Office in 1922. He represented England at the successive Paris, Hague and Locarno conferences, was CHMN Joint Intelligence for the Chiefs of Staff 1939-45, and ambassador to Poland during the critical years of 1945-47. When that country was turned over to the Soviet Union, with England's surreptitious support. Other charter subscribers to the Bank of England were the Duke of Devonshire, William Cavendish, who built Chatsworth. He also had signed the invitation to William to assume the throne of England. He was high steward at Anne's coronation in 1702, and was said to lead a profligate private life. The present Duke sold 7 drawings in July 1984 for $9.2 million. The 11th Duke married Deborah Freeman McFord, daughter of Baron Redesdale. His present brother-in-law, Baron Redesdale, is vice president of Chase Manhattan Bank. The Duke of Leeds, Sir Thomas Osborne, who also signed the invitation to William, he was Lord High Treasurer and had arranged the marriage of Mary. He was later impeached for receiving a large bribe to procure the charter of the East India Company in 1691. Because of his favored position at court, the proceedings were never concluded, and he left one of the largest fortunes in England, Earl of Pembroke, Thomas Herbert, who became the first Lord of the Admiralty, and later Lord Privy Seal, Earl of Carnarvon, who is also Earl of Powys and Earl of Bradford. Lord Edward Russell, created Earl of Orford 1697, he had joined the service of William in 1683, was appointed Treasurer of the Navy 1689, first Lord of Admiralty 1696-17, and Lord Justice 1697-1714. Sir Robert Walpole, the famed British leader, was created Earl of Orford in the second creation, William Paterson, usually 31. Credited with being the founder of the Bank of England, he was forced out within a year, as Iridium Theodore Jansen, who invested £1,000. Dr. Hugh Chamberlain, John S. Gill, an eccentric writer and pamphleteer. Dr. Nicholas Barbon, son of Praise God Barebones, who started the first insurance company in Great Britain. John Holland, a reputed Englishman who also started the Bank of Scotland in 1695. Michael Godfrey, who died at Namur, Belgium on his way to Antwerp to establish a branch of the Bank of England. He was the first deputy governor of the Bank of England, and nephew of Sir Edward Godfrey, who was murdered by Titus Oakes in 1678. Sir John Hoblin and 20 members of his family were also early stockholders. Sir John became Lord of the Admiralty, and Lord Mayor of London. His brother James was deputy governor of the Bank of England. Salomon de Medina, later knighted by William III, Sir William Scotton, Sir Gilbert Heathcote, director of Bank of England, 1699-1701, and from 1723-25, he was sheriff and later Lord Mayor of London, founded the New East India Company in 1693, his parsimony was ridiculed by Alexander Pope in his quatrains. Sir Charles Montague, 1st Earl of Halifax, and Chancellor of the Exchequer, the present Earl is a director of Hambrose Bank. Marquis Normandy, John Sheffield, also held the title of Duke of Buckingham. He is buried in Westminster Abbey. Thomas Howard, Earl of Arundel, controller of the royal household. Charles Chaplin, and the philosopher, John Locke. In his The Bank of England, A History, Sir John Clapham notes that by 1721, a number of Spanish and Portuguese Jews had been buying stock in the Bank of England. M. Medina, to D.A. Costas, Fonseca, Henriquez, Mendez, Nunes, Rodriguez, Salvador Teixeira de Mattis, Jacob and Theodore Jacobs, Moses and Jacob Abravanel, Francis Pereira. Clapham notes that, since 175-1 there has been very little trading in Bank of England stock, it has been very closely held for more than two centuries. The Bank of England has played a prominent role in American history. Without it, the United States would not exist. The American colonists considered themselves loyal Englishmen to Ammon, but when 31, they began to enjoy an equal prosperity by printing and circulating their own colonial scrip, the stockholders of the Bank of England went to George III and informed him that their monopoly of interest-bearing notes in the colonies was at stake. He banned the scrip, with the result that there was an immediate depression in the commercial life of the Americas. This was the cause of the rebellion, as Benjamin Franklin pointed out. The little tax on tea, amounting to about a dollar a year per American family, could have been borne, but the colonists could not survive the banning of their own money. The Bank of England and the Rothschilds continued to play a dominant role in the commercial life of the United States, causing panics and depressions for the Rothschilds whenever their officials were instructed to do so. When the Second Bank of the United States expired in 1836, and President Jackson refused to renew it, creating great prosperity in the United States when government funds were deposited in other banks, the Rothschilds punished the upstarts by causing the Panic of 1837. As Henry Clews writes, 28 years on Wall Street, p. 157, the panic of 1837 was aggravated by the Bank of England when it in one day threw out all the paper connected with the United States. By refusing to credit American notes and stocks, the Bank of England created financial panic among the holders of that paper. The panic enabled Rothschild's agents, Peabody and Belmont, to reap a fortune in buying up depreciated stocks during the panic. The Bank of England has played a prominent role in wars, revolutions, and espionage, as well as business panics. When Napoleon escaped from Elba in 1815, the London gold market jumped overnight from £4.60 to £5.70. The leading buyer was Nathan Mayer Rothschild, who was under orders from the British Treasury to dispatch gold to the Duke of Wellington, grouping to stop Napoleon. After Waterloo, the price of gold dropped. During the 20th century, the most important name at the Bank of England was Lord Montagnorman, his grandfather. 32. George Ward Norman had been governor of the Bank of England from 1821 to 1872, longer than any other man. His other grandfather, Lord Collett, was governor of the Bank of England from 1887-89, and managing partner of Brown Shipley Company in London for 25 years. In 1894, Montagnorman was sent to New York to work in the offices of Brown Brothers. He was befriended by the W.A. Delano family, and lived with Marco family, partners of Brown Brothers. In 1907, Norman was elected to the court of the Bank of England. In 1912, he had a severe nervous breakdown, and was treated by Jung in Switzerland. He became deputy governor of the Bank of England in 1916, and later served until 1944 as governor. The Wall Street Journal wrote of him in 1927, "Mr. M. Collett Norman, the governor of the Bank of England, is now head and shoulders above all other British bankers. No other British banker has ever been as independent and supreme in the world of British finance as Mr. Norman is today. He has just been elected governor for the 8th year in succession. Before the war, no governor was allowed to hold office for more than 2 years, but Mr. Norman has broken all precedents. He runs his bank and his treasury as well. He appears to have no associations except his employees. He gives no interviews. He leaves the British financial world wholly in the thick as to his plans and ideas. The idea that one individual ran the Bank of England to suit himself, with no influences, is too ridiculous to be considered. What about the Rothschilds? What about the other shareholders?" Carol Quigley, in Tragedy and Hope, notes that M. Norman said, "He hold the hegemony of the currency, he is called the currency dictator of Europe." Lionel Fraser of J. Henry Schroeder Wag notes in his autobiography, All to the Good, that he was in charge of Lord Norman's personal investments. He also notes of the firm of Helbert Wag, former jewelers from Halberstadt, and now London Banking House, later J. Henry Schroeder Wag, the firm was official brokers on stock exchange to the great and all-powerful House of Rothschild. Both Wag and Schroeder had been in business in London for 159 years, when they merged in 1960. Another writer notes that Lord Norman frequently consulted with J.P. Morgan before making his Bank of England decisions. Gordon Richardson, chairman of J. Henry. 33. Schroeder from 1962 to 72, then became governor of the Bank of England from 1972 to 83. When he was succeeded by Robert Lee Pemberton, CHMN of the National Westminster Bank, also director of Equitable M-he married into the Cecil Burley family. The present directors of the Bank of England are G.W. McMahon, deputy governor, since 1964, economic analyst treasury 1953-57, advisor British Embassy Washington 1957-60, Sir Adrian Cadbury CHMN Cadbury Squibbs, director IBM UK, Leopold D. Rothschild in M. Rothschild and Sons etc., George V. Blondin, executive director, Bank of England, since 1947, served with IMF 1955-58 A.D. Lotness, Director. J. Henry Schroeder Wag, G.A. Drain, Member Trilateral Commission, Treasurer European Movement, Franco-British Council, British North American Committee, Lawyer for many Uniona Indie Health Association S, Sir Jasper Hullum, has been on the board since 1936 D.G. Scully CHMNS.G.Warburg.co.com Orion Insurance, Union Discount of London, Mercury Securities, which now owns S.G. Warburg Company Irwin Holdings J.M. Clay, Departure CHMN Hambros Bank CHMN Johnson & Firth Brown Ltd. Hambros Life Assurance, S.J.R. Davidston LCHMN British Petroleum, Deer, Kuwait Oil Company, The Wellcome Trust, Trustee The Economist, whose CHMN is Evelyn D. Rothschild, Lord Nelson of Stafford CHMN Jet Limited CHMN Royal Worcester Company, Natal Bank of Australasia, International Nickel, British Aircraft, English Electric, Marconi Limited CHMN World Power Conference, Worshipful Company, of Goldsmiths, Middle Eastern Asn, Lord Weir CHMN The Weir Group CHMN Great Northern Investment Trust, E.A.J. George, Executive, Dear Bank of England, Director Gilt-edged Division Bank of England, IMF 1972-72, Bank for International Settlements 1966-69, Sir Hector Latting CHMN United Biscuit, Allied Lyon, Royal Insurance, Sir Alastair Pilkington CHMN Pilkington Brothers, Glass, Director British Petroleum, British Railways Board. The Bank of England also dominates the Bank of Scotland, whose CHMN is Robert Bruce, Lord Balfour. His title Balfour of Burleigh was created in 1607. He is manager of English Electric and Viking Oil. He married the daughter of magnate E.S. Manessa. Directors of Bank of Scotland include Lord Cliddesmore, also Director Barclays Bank, and Wright. 34. Honourable Lord Polwarth, Director of Halliburton's, which interlocks with the Rothschild First City Bank of Houston and Citibank, Imperial Chemical Industries, Canadian Pacific, and Brown and Root Wimpey Highland Fabricators, which interlocks with George Wimpey PLC, largest construction firm in the British Empire, whose 44 companies have revenues of £1.2 billion per year. Lord Polwarth's daughter married Baron Morin, High Commissioner of Canada, who previously served as ambassador to Hungary and to Chad. Baron Morin's daughter married Baron Mountevans, manager of Consolidated Goldfields. Directors of George Wimpey PLC included S.S. Jardine, Viscount Hood, who is CHMN Petrothena UK, and Director J. Henry Schroeder Wagg, and Union Minier, and Sir Joseph Latham, CHMN Aerial International, Director Deutsches Credit Bank. Wimpey Company interlocks with Schroeder Ltd., parent of J. Henry Schroeder Wagg. The Earl of Airlie, David Ogilvie, is CHMN of Schroeder. He married Virginia Ryan, granddaughter of Otto Kahn and Thomas Fortune Ryan. The Earl is also director of Royal Bank of Scotland. Directors of Schroeder include Lord Franks, director of the Rockefeller Foundation, the Rhodes Trust, and Kennedy Center. He is a former ambassador to the United States, G.W. Malincrit, Sir, for example, Woodruff of Unilever, and Daniel Jansen of the Bank of England. One of the great Rothschild hoaxes was the disarmament movement of the early 1930s. The idea was not to disarm, but to persuade the nations to junk what arms they had so they could later be sold new ones. The merchants of death, as they were popularly known in those days, were never more than errand boys for their true masters, the bankers of death, or, as they were also known, the Brotherhood of Death. In 1897, Vickers, in which Rothschilds had the largest holding, bought Naval Construction and Armament Company, and Maxim Nordenfeldt Guns and Ammunition Company. The new Vickers Maxim Company was able to test its products in the Spanish-American War, which was set off by J&W Zeligman Company to obtain the white gold. 35. Sugar, of Cuba, the Boer War of 1899-191, to seize the gold and diamond fields of the Witwatersrand, and the Russo-Japanese War of 1905, designed to weaken the Tsar and make the communist revolution inevitable. These three wars provided the excuse for tooling up for the mass production of World Wars I and II. In 1897, an international power trust was formed, consisting of DuPont, Nobel, Kuhn, and Rottweiler, which divided the world into four distinct sales territories. The CHMN of Vickers, Sir Herbert Lawrence, was director of Sun Assurance Office Ltd. Sun Life Assurance, and CHMN the London Committee of the Ottoman Bank. Directors included Sir Otto Niemeyer, director of the Bank of England, and the Anglo International Bank, S. Lowy, the German arms magnate, Lowy and Company, Sir Vincent Taylor, president of the Ottoman Debt Council, financial expert on the Near East, and Sir Basil Zadaroff, the mystery man of Europe. The high water mark of the Merchants of Death hoax was reached in the Nye Committee hearings of 1934, copies of which are invariably missing in government libraries. Alger Hiss was investigator and counsel for the committee. Typical was Chairman Nye's questioning of Mr. Carse of the Electric Boat Company, a subsidiary of Vickers CHMN Nye, in 1917. Mr. Carse, you drafted Alitur to help Zadaroff avoid paying income tax on your commissions to him of $766,852. There is Exhibit 24, a letter dated September 21, addressed to Mr. H. C. Sheridan, Washington, D.C. Who is Mr. Sheridan, Mr. Carse? Carse, he owns the Hotel Washington. At that time he was the agent of Vickers Limited in this country, and was also a representative of Zadaroff. Mr. Sheridan handled Mr. Zadaroff's income tax with White and Case. CHMN, did you know that this was false, that this omission of $1 million referred to was actually Sir Basil Zadaroff's income? Carse, no, I did not know anything about Zadaroff's income. CHMN, but you have told us that a letter by Zadaroff 6 weeks earlier that 82,000 francs received was his own personal income. Carse, I do not know what Zadaroff did in his business. He did not tell me. CHMN, did Zadaroff succeed in escaping the payment of income tax to the United States? Carse, I. 36. Believe there was some settlement made. Sheridan handled it. Point. Zadaroff was never a stockholder in so far as I ever knew. The men who handle very large stock do not put the stock in their own names. CHMN : Zadaroff wrote to you the 19th of May, 1925. T. Desire no thanks for what I have done, because I am bound to attend to the interest of my firm of Vickers and the Electric Boat Company, in both of which I am a stockholder. Carse, I know he told me that, but I was never able to trace anything. Senator Clark then pursued questioning on how the armaments firms and oil companies promoted wars. Clark, so this whole occasion of arming Peru, and of the revolution in Bolivia on the basis of arming against Chile was based on erroneous rumor? Mr. Spezer, that is my impression. Clark, you wanted to interest the large oil companies in financing an armament program for South America. Carse, I was willing to present any proposition the government might approve with regard to any oil companies which might be interested. The Nye Committee frequently came back to Zadaroff's activities, referring to him as a kind of superspy in high social and influential circles. For many years he exercised great influence on Prime Minister Lloyd George of England. Zadaroff, who began his career as a brothel tout and underworld tough, arranged for Lloyd George to have an affair with Zadaroff's wife. Arthur Mondy Gregory, an associate of Lloyd George, was also a Zadaroff agent. Mondy Gregory for many years regularly peddled peerages in London clubs. Knighthoods, not hereditary, were £1,000–£12,000, baronetcies went for as high as £40,000, of which he paid Lloyd George a standard £5,000 each. Mondy Gregory W.S. also closely associated with Sir Basil Thompson in British counter-espionage. Zadaroff, who was born in 1851 in Constantinople, married one Emily Ann Burroughs of Knightsbridge. Mondy Gregory then introduced Emily Ann to the insatiable Lloyd George. From that time on, he was at Zadaroff's mercy. Although Zadaroff was closely associated with Lloyd George throughout World War I until 1922, when their association effectively ended Lloyd George's political career, the name Zadaroff appears nowhere in Lloyd George's extensive memoirs. Lloyd George's 37. Political career came to an end after Zadaroff persuaded him to help the Greeks against Turkey in 1920, a disastrous adventure which brought about Lloyd George's downfall from political power. George Donald McCormick, in The Mask of Merlin, the definitive work on Lloyd George, states, Zadaroff kept him, Lloyd George, closely informed on the Balkans. During the war, Zadaroff was sent on various secret missions by Lloyd George. The big three, Wilson, Lloyd George and Clemenceau, met in Zatoroth's home in Paris. On one occasion, Zatoroth went to German, in 191-7, on Lloyd George's personal instructions, disguised in the uniform of a Bulgarian army doctor. Clemenceau later said, "The information which Zatoroth secured in Germany for Lloyd George was the most important piece of intelligence of the whole war." Zatoroth was awarded the Order of British Empire in 1918 for this mission. McCormick also notes, Zatoroth had interests in Briey furnaces of the Comite de Forges. Throughout the war no action was taken against Briey or nearby Fionville, a German area vital to the German army. Orders to bombard Briey were cancelled on orders of Zatoroth. M. Barth protested this event in a speech to the French Parliament January 24, 1919. McCormick found that Zatoroth had made some interesting confessions to close associates. He boasted to Russia de Forbes, "I made wars, so that I could sell arms to both sides." He offered astute political advice to Sir Robert Lord Boothby, "Begin on the left in politics, and then, if necessary, work over to the right. Remember it is sometimes necessary to kick off the ladder those who have helped you to climb it." In addition to his Vickers and electric boat stock, Zatoroth had large holdings in other armaments manufacturers, Krupp and Skoda. The Skoda works of Czechoslovakia were controlled by the powerful Schneider family of Schneider-Cruset, headed by Eugene Schneider, whose granddaughter married the present Duke of Bedford. The Nye Committee found that Vickers interlocked with Brown Bavary of Switzerland, Fokker, Bankonomane, Mitsui, Schneider, and 10 other armaments firms around the world. Vickers set up a torpedo. 38. Manufacturing firm, Société Française de Torpilles Whitehead, with the former Whitehead Company, whose owner, James B. Whitehead, then became English ambassador to France. Frau Margarete von Bismarck was a director of Société Française, as was Count Edgar Hoyos of Fulham. At its peak in the 1930s, the Vickers network included Harvey Steel, Chas. Camel and Company Shipbuilding, John Brown and Company, Krupp and Dillinger of Germany, Turney Company of Italy, Bethlehem Steel and Electric Boat in the U.S., Schneider, Chitilin Steel, Nobel Dynamite Trust, and Chilworth Gunpowder Company. The trustee for the debentures of the armaments firms was Royal Exchange Assurance Company of London, of which E. Roland Harriman of Brown Brothers Harriman was a director. As First Lord of the Admiralty, Winston Churchill obligingly changed the fuel of the entire English fleet from coal to oil, as a favor to the Samuel family which owned Royal Dutch Shell. The most revealing works on the armaments dealers, the Nye Committee hearings, and Merchants of Death are now 50 years old. On p. 167 of Merchants we find that the Société Minière de Pinerolo controls the most important lead mines of the world, accounting for 1/8 of the world's production. Since 1833 the Sea French bankers, the Rothschilds, have controlled these mines, but in 1909 the Rothschild Bank entered into an alliance with the Metallgesellschaft of Frankfurt, the company in which both the Kaiser and Krupp were heavily interested. This company remained under German and French control for about 2 years of the war. At the outbreak of hostilities, 1-0 tons of lead were shipped from these mines to Germany, via Switzerland. When shipments to France were resumed, the price was raised to such an extent that it more than doubled the price which the English paid for their lead. Freight trade between Germany and France in important chemicals, for powder, etc. continued. The Swiss supplied both sides with electric power. All along their frontier great powerhouses sprang into being, facing